On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are talking about your food and whether you should be concerned by any of those empty shelves or less stocked shelves. And we're going to talk about what is unquestionably the stupidest rule in all of sports. If you were watching football on Sunday evening, you know what Don Roberts and I are going to be talking about. What is the NFL's problem with overtime anyway? Well, we'll dive into it. Stick with us.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
I want to talk about food for a few minutes this evening because, because you probably are. We have heard lots and lots of talk about what's going on with supply chains and all the rest on radio and on TV and in articles that you've read and everything else. But now, what I'm noticing, now I am hearing it in conversations. I am hearing real people talk about it, not just talking heads. There's a big difference. It suggests to me that it's actually hitting home now, that we are now in a bit of a weird time. And the real question, I think, and we'll get to that in a moment here, is this going to just blow over in a few weeks once, you know, everything gets back to normal, or is this a little bit bigger than that? Is this maybe not a new reality, but something we at least have to ponder a little bit more? Sylvain Charlebois, we love having him on, the food professor. He is the director of the Agri-Foods Analytic Lab at Dalhousie University. He joins us now. Thank you so much for the time today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So I was thinking about this today, and, you know, we are really, and I don't mean to be too deep in everything here, but I mean, we really are a very fortunate, very blessed people, because for most of our lives, most of us have never seen an empty store shelf. And if you go around the rest of the world, that's very, very common, not here. So when we see now, not every shelf open, but when we see things that are not there, when we do see empty store shelves, boy, it seems shocking.
I thought we were well trained back in March of 2020, to be honest, Scott. We saw empty shelves a little less than 2 years ago. And now we're looking at a situation we're seeing empty shelves. I've actually been seeing empty shelves for months now. And I think the food industry was experiencing supply chain fatigue with everything going on. It's a bit of a miracle to see how the food industry has been able to execute with little resources, really. They've been doing so well. And every now and then there's an issue that comes up. And this time around, we're talking about vaccine mandates at the border. And I think people have the right to be concerned. But generally speaking, I must say that we don't have to worry. Often Canadians will not necessarily fully appreciate our industry's resilience. Grocers want to make money. And in order to make money, they need product. Empty shelves are bad for business. That's the motivator right there. And they'll do anything they can to actually get products into the store so you can actually buy them. Because if you walk away from the store with nothing in your hands, that's bad for business. I want to start there because I want the people to realize that companies out there hiring real people want to make a good living and want to make money. And the only way to do that is to keep us fed.
Yeah. And I look, you're absolutely right that we have seen things missing on the shelves. It's around here anyway that I've seen, and you know, maybe I'm the outlier here. It's been the odd thing though. And now we're seeing people say, you know, it's becoming more common. I guess maybe that's the thing, is that we thought maybe this would just blow over really quickly. It really does. As you say though, you know, while there's a negative component to this, it really does show that our system is not somehow made of magic, because we never think about it until now. But B, it is still working. We still do have food on the shelves, even if they're all not full. I mean, I suppose it's a glass half full, glass half empty situation, depending how you want to look at it.
Well, it's hit and miss, and people shouldn't panic if they see an empty shelf or empty shelves. It's actually quite normal, to be honest. Omicron was a gut punch to the food industry. And yes, the vaccine mandates won't help, but it won't be a disaster either. Companies will figure out ways to get food into the country. Freight costs have actually doubled. Those are things that we know for products coming in from the United States. But overall, I actually do expect shelves to be stocked regularly. If you go into a grocery store and if there's something missing there, chances are a few days later, you'll actually go back to the store and you'll find what was missing a few days before. Supply chains are running slowly. They're not as effective as they used to because of Omicron, because of all the things that we've seen so far. And so I'm less concerned about supplies. I'm a little bit more concerned about two things, quality and price. I must say, I mean, we're still comfortable with our forecast we released 6 weeks ago. 7% over the year, but we can certainly see prices go up, say, in some section of the grocery store.
Well, and that, you know, that comes to there's a poll that came out on Friday, and, you know, I was trying to read what I really understood of this. It's by Angus Reid, and the headline is 60% of Canadians are having a hard time providing enough food for their families. And when I first read that, I thought, okay, they can't get their hands on food. Well, it doesn't sound like that's what they're talking about. It sounds like the 60% are saying, boy, the cost of food has really gone up and it's much, much more difficult to feed my family now. It's not availability, it's price.
That's right. And food security, there are three components to food security: safety, access, and affordability. So there's a lot of stuff going on in social media about access, and I think a lot of people are trying to weaponize pictures with empty shelves, unfortunately, and that's unfortunate, to basically support some sort of vaccine or anti-vaccine related narrative. That's not what we need right now.
Isn't that everything though, Sylvain? Isn't that with everything? I mean, everything is weaponized politically now to make a point on both sides of the aisle. You can't. So food is.
Oh my goodness!
I guess it's inevitable. It was going to be food too.
I know, and so this is unfortunate. What's happening? But essentially, what people need to know is that we will continue to have food in Canada. It's just going to be choppy for a while and messy. You just need to be a bit patient and shift your expectations a little bit.
How long? So off the top here, I said, you know, is this going to be something that we have to get used to a little bit, or is this something that we expect?
Well, I mean, essentially,
this something
like
that
I said, we're not out of the woods yet. It's going to take a while before we see things calm. And I think it's going to take until probably midsummer before things will stabilize at the grocery store.
So what has to happen for this to return fully to normal then? Is it just that we just have to get back to normal trucking and everything else and then we get back to normal? Is there something else?
Right now, the industry is actually working very hard to make sure that connections are made from farm to fork. Like I said, I think we need to trust what is going on. Grocers know what they're doing. Canadian grocers know what they're doing. They'll figure out a way to actually get food to sell to us. So, yes, some of the problems that we see is policy-induced. Yes, I admit it. But at the same time, the food industry has always been it's always been able to deliver regardless what they were thrown at. They can actually deal with some of the things that we've actually done over the years. And so the pandemic is there's nothing different there.
Sylvain Charlebois, professor of food. He's the food professor. That's how we better know him. That's how everyone knows him. We really appreciate, as always, we appreciate you taking a few minutes today. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Let me bring in a guy we have here every Monday night because, mostly because we really like having him on. Don Robertson, owner and operator of the Dundas Real McCoys, the guy behind ComChoice Realty, the I'm assuming the soon to be acclaimed 2021 unanimous vote Dundas Citizen of the Year. I don't even think they're going to put another candidate in against you, Don. I think it's going to be a walk. At least that's the plan. How are you?
I'm good, Scott. How are you? Chilly, eh?
Are you? You seem very surprised by the acclamation that you may be getting.
Well, I'm just thinking that so few people in Dundas have actually left their house in the last 2 years just by showing up outside my winter for you.
Hey, you know, they don't ask how, they ask how many. Isn't that the line from hockey always?
That's right. That's exactly right. So, yep, I may as well. Well, we'll see how it goes.
We'll see. You let us know whose palms must be greased, and we'll put the audience into action.
Okay. Thank you.
We would never grease a palm. We would simply, laud your achievements. Hey, let me ask you this. Did you watch, I'm assuming you watched some football yesterday.
I did. I did.
So, all right, you are a guy, Don, you are a guy who not only has coached and played and whatever else, but you're a guy who has started a professional league. So you understand a little bit about putting together rules and policies and everything else. Explain to me, if you can, give me any possible, I will accept any explanation. Give me any possible explanation for why the NFL's overtime system, where if the team that wins the toss and takes the ball first scores a touchdown, the other team doesn't get a chance to touch the ball and it's game over. Give me your most wild explanation for how that makes any sense whatsoever.
Well, first of all, it doesn't. But what I find more curious is the people that actually put it into place having to know something like this would happen. I can't fathom that in a room where they're developing how to determine a winner in a NFL game, playoff game, that has so much on the line, somebody didn't say, okay, so if you win the flip, you get the ball. And if they score, it's over. Like, nobody else said, wow, that doesn't seem fair. Like, it goes back to that. It doesn't go back to what happened yesterday. It goes back to what in hell was anybody thinking when they adopted the rule? I can't fathom it. For the life of me, it makes no sense. I compared it today. I was talking to a couple of guys. I said, that'd be like Canada and U.S. being in the shootout in the Olympics in hockey. And us getting to shoot first, Crosby scores, okay, gold medal Canada. Like, really? How does that make any sense?
Yeah, so, and what here's the thing about it that, I mean, and there's a bunch, and I want to spend a minute or two on this with you, but what I really don't get about this, Don, is, okay, so whatever the reason that might be, and whatever the comparisons and metaphors and everything else that we might come up with, what I don't get about this is you're the NFL, you're the NFL owners, you're the NFL commissioner, you're all the rest. And we're talking about playoffs. I mean, if you want to make a rule for the regular season, like the NHL has, where we go to a shootout after 5 minutes and then, but in the playoffs, different story, but in the playoffs, if you've got an overtime game, is that not a natural belief that, you know what, if we're going to overtime in the playoffs, that's pretty darn exciting. Like, we're probably not having millions of fans tuning out at that point when we go to overtime in a playoffs. There, if anything, people are going to be texting their buddies going, hey, have you tuned into the so-and-so game? They're going to overtime. What I'm trying to figure out is, who are the geniuses in the NFL? And they generally are geniuses as far as building the product, who've decided that at a time when you would have most people interested, we are going to say, no, we've had enough. That's good. We're fine. It makes no sense.
You would. No, it doesn't. You can't rationalize it. It's so bizarre. We should never be having this conversation. And to your point, that especially a game like that. Well, any game that gets into overtime obviously has some pretty exciting components to it, unless it's nothing-nothing, and that doesn't happen. But this game had all the ingredients of people saying, I just want to keep watching it forever. Like, right? Like, you want those great games to last. And yes. I'm pretty sure that the 30-second ads aren't like $8,000 a piece. And the more you can sink into those things, the better off you are. And of all times of the year, you really don't have any time constraints. You know, during the regular season, everybody starts at 1, then everybody starts at 4. And, you know, we can't be letting these things hang on. This is the playoffs. And even if one network's got a game and it's going into overtime and somebody doesn't flip over to watch the other game, who cares? Like, it's the playoffs. I'd love to hear the decision makers today that were in that room and have them explain, is this still a good idea to you?
Well, and so, okay, Don, the NFL gets something like $10 billion a year, give or take, from TV deals. So clearly the networks are using NFL football to get eyeballs onto their network so that then people watch the game, which helps. And then when the game is over, we've already got these eyeballs here. So hopefully they'll stick around for our new like series CSI Des Moines or whatever, you know, the new thing is. So we're going to have all these people who are now a captive audience who will stick around and watch our next show, which will become a big hit because they're already here. If the idea is we can't go late, we can't delay the start of CSI Des Moines because the NFL overtime game is going to ruin things, I think they are truly out of their minds, which again goes against everything the NFL is about because they are genius at getting audiences. If the game goes a little late and you have to delay the start of your show, but you've got more people who are already there, that's a bigger audience for you. And if you can't delay the start of that other show, well, you know, it is absolutely baffling to me. And I tweeted it out yesterday before the overtime because I didn't want someone saying, well, it's because it's the Bills, everyone's complaining. I put it out on Twitter before the overtime saying, we are going to see whoever wins the coin toss here, we are going to see this stupid thing happen because the defenses by that point were exhausted. They were exhausted.
Yeah.
And you knew that whoever won the coin toss, whoever got the ball was probably going to go and score a touchdown. And in fact, Ian Rappaport, who works for NFL Network, tweeted something out today, and I didn't have the numbers. I'm thankful that he did. 11 times in NFL history since they went to this playoff format, 11 times they've had a playoff game go to overtime in the NFL. 10 of those times, the team that won the coin toss won the game. And 7 of those times, they won it on the first drive, so the other team never got to touch the ball. It's a massive problem.
But it's not new, and they're not changing it. So they clearly don't see it as a massive problem. Kansas City got beat out that way, I think it was 3 years ago.
Yep.
On the same kind of thing. And I don't know how. I mean, I can see somebody being into the beer a little bit and coming up with the idea, but when it carries on like this and they still think it's okay, I find that unusual. I would love to hear the rationale for keeping it.
I looked today, Don, for a long time to find some explanation as to why, and there isn't. All it is says, here's the rule. They don't offer an explanation.
No rationale, right, to do this kind of thing.
Not that I could find.
Well, I'm sure if you went back to when Kansas City got beat out, there'd have been an uproar in Kansas City how truly unfair it is. It's not the way to determine a winner. I think it would be a little bit different today's paper, but 3 years ago when it happened to them, I don't get it. I mean, the owners, I mean, it's not like they're waiting to listen to this show to go, hey, there's a lot of people think this is crazy. I mean, It's got to be general consensus.
Go online. Everybody. Well, go ahead.
No, I think the only tweak they have to do, I think it would be generally accepted, is give the Bills the ball. And if they don't do anything with it, then you win. But you
everybody gets to have the ball once, at least.
Yeah. Yep. And I think they have to score a touchdown, correct, to end the game?
On that first play, yes. But after that, it's sudden death, it's anything.
Yes. So, I mean, I guess there's no point in trying to field goal if you're Casey. You're going to use all four downs every time you can. You just got to score a touchdown. Like, field goal is not going to do you any good, I don't assume. But in any event, it's just inconceivable to not give the other guy a ball and give him a chance. If they've just played 60 minutes to a draw, it's particularly unfair. Anyway.
I go to the NFL people, and my question is this. Why? What is your rush? Like, why are you so eager to get this game done and get out that you couldn't give the time? I mean, so let's say Kansas City scored and then Buffalo gets the ball back and it's another 5 minutes of millions of people for a captive audience. What are you rushing to that you are in such a hurry to finish this game and get out of it? That's the part I just don't get, because it's to your benefit as a business.
Well, I'm pretty convinced. Although maybe not 100% sure, I'm pretty convinced the show following isn't live. Like, it's not Saturday Night Live coming on after this. You know, the new show's in the can. They can start it whenever they want, which makes it more bizarre. Do you remember? I don't know if you'd be old enough to. Dave Hodge flipping the pencil.
I do.
Because CBC wanted to go to the news and break away from programming.
And I do.
Cost him his job.
And I remember
everybody agreed with him. He was right.
Carry on. He was right. And I remember back, now I wasn't old enough to remember watching it, but reading about the Heidi game, which was an NFL game, where they cut away from the game to show the movie Heidi. I think it was on ABC. And it was in like 2 minutes left in the game of a tie game or something. And all of a sudden away we go to the Swiss Alps to watch all of a sudden this movie of this little Swiss or German girl or whatever it was. And people were outraged, and that sort of became the lesson. Like, don't do that. Just delay it a little bit. Now it's so much easier today too, because anything you want to, you put it on PVR. People can PVR the stuff, or they can find it somewhere else. The whole thing just seemed so inane. And this is not the first time. We've seen this happen before, and it truly makes no sense. The argument that I heard today from those supporting it, the primary argument from those supporting it was, look, the Bills had the lead with 13 seconds left. If they had just defended properly and hadn't blown the lead, this wouldn't be an issue. And if you can't protect for 13 seconds, you don't deserve to win. You can't complain about the overtime. And all right, you know what? Yes, they should have protected that lead for 13 seconds. However, if a baseball team has a 5-run lead in the ninth inning and blows the lead, and now it goes to extra innings, does that mean that if the team scores in the top of the inning, the visiting team, we say, okay, game over, home team doesn't get to have an at-bat at the bottom because they should never have blown that lead?
Yeah, they have a chance.
There's so many examples. There's so many ways you can point to this and say it just is absolutely nonsensical. And, you know, here, Don, the part about this that is going to really be a problem, and I this is going to be, so the Buffalo Bills have in their arsenal right now of historic games, they have Wide Right in the Super Bowl. They have the Music City Miracle. They have, what's the other one they have? There's another one I'm forgetting. The Buffalo Sabres have Toe in the Crease from Brett Hull. You're now going to, and you add this one to it, and you know, I'll bet money, even though I don't bet, and I say that often. Kansas City is going to go on now and win the Super Bowl and probably win handily over everyone else, which is going to tell all the people from Buffalo who has suffered all these horrendous losses that are so painful that they would have won the Super Bowl this year had that just panned out. That's what's going to happen because that's the way it works.
Well, the blessing for the Buffalo coach might be that it has taken some of the heat off them not being able to stop KC from marching down and get that field goal.
Yeah. Yeah. No. They should have been able to prevent that. But again, regardless of what the circumstance was, regardless of what the situation was, you know what, remember this, and if anyone was watching this one, at the beginning of when they got together, when Josh Allen and whoever was the captain for Kansas City got together for the coin toss for overtime, the official said, "We're starting a whole new game." Well, we're starting a whole new game, except that one of you doesn't get to play. So other than that, it's a whole new game. If it's a whole new game, you should play it like a game. Anyway, yeah. Let's move along. I think it's the stupidest rule in all of sports. And when you consider that coaches in baseball have to wear uniforms on the field for no particular reason, and this is stupider than that, you're saying something. Don, I was saying before that you've run teams and you've coached teams. You've also started leagues. Well, you know what? The part of the reason we have you on here is because there's really nothing in sports you haven't done other than maybe cheerleading. And I'm not even sure about that. And I'm not sure I want to know. But you have also been an official in sports. And we got this story last week that AAA baseball this summer is going to be now bringing in robot home plate umpires calling balls and strikes. You like the idea, or let humans call humans and accept the mistakes that might come along with that?
I think you got to let umpires do the games. I can see in some sports where that type of technology could help, but not in baseball. I mean, I has there been a huge uproar about how bad it is? I mean, it's always bad, right? If you don't win, when you know, you know, I pitch fastball. When you come in and I knew you as an umpire, I knew what you'd give and what you wouldn't give. And every once in a while, we'd have to have a chat. But I think the human element's a big part of it. Who's going to call when somebody's sliding at home? Who's going to make the call when a guy tries to steal home from third base on a fastball? Like, who's making that call?
You'll still have that. You'll still have live umpires for that. You're just going to have balls and strikes now be called by them.
The umpire's going to be there, but he won't be calling the balls and strikes.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess he's probably, you know, on call in case the machine goes wonky or something. But, yeah, it's going to be – you're going to be calling bases, basically, and the machine is going to be calling all the balls and strikes.
Who came up with that idea? The same guy that came up with the overtime for the NFL game? Like, I think it's fine having the human element in there. I mean, it goes both ways. If he's having a bad game, and as a former official, if that can happen, I was told by many, that you're having an off night. And that's okay. You're having an off night for both teams. So it's just, I think they should leave it, and I think it's probably the thin edge of the wedge to see how it goes there, because maybe we'll bring it in to Major League Baseball.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely 100%. You'll have a fight with the Major League Umpire Union, but here's the thing, Don, is that the irony of this is, okay, so the Umpires Union says, hey, we're outraged by this. We refuse to take the field. And baseball says, perfect. Now we'll have home plate balls and strikes, and we'll just call the base plays from a video monitor up in the stand somewhere with one person doing it, and we'll get it right every single time. I mean, the umpires, they're going to be arguing to their own detriment with this.
Yeah, it would be crazy, right? I mean, it's I mean, the managers make mistakes. The players on the field make mistakes. They make bad throws, right? They don't read the play well. They don't go home when they should. You know, they try and take a double play, and there's only one out, and they don't get it, and the run scores cost you the game. Like, it's just, if we're not going to play the games and have them officiated by humans, then perhaps we shouldn't play the games anymore. I mean, I don't agree with it. I don't like it. I know what we have isn't perfect, but it's part of the game and has been for 100 years. And I know I sound like an old fart, but...
Human element is part of the game. Human element is part of the game, whether it's player or official or manager or whatever. Human element has always been a part of the game.
Well, it is. And whether a guy gets so upset at the umpire, he throws a bat and he throws his helmet and gets kicked out of the game, that's part of the human element. So this will be a lot of fun. So a guy takes a backwards K, which means he's standing there when he struck out, for those that don't understand that part. But he gets called out on strikes. What's he going to do, turn around and smash the little machine with his bat? Well, you didn't even got anybody can yell that. I can see if I'm umpiring and you're yelling at me, I said, don't talk to me, talk to the machine. It's a man, Ed. Like, what do you even argue with? That'd be fun watching... when Gibby was in Toronto, watching him run out and yell at the little machine. Boy, where are they going to put it anyway?
It'll be up in the, I'm assuming it'll be in the outfield shooting towards home plate. So it creates a little box and then the home plate umpire. So here's how it works. The home plate umpire will still make the call physically because he'll get a buzz or something for strike or ball. So he'll have to make the call. But Don, once again, we are not far away if at all from, well, why do we even need umpires on the field then? I mean, what would be the reason to say you couldn't just, or as opposed to the umpire saying, you know, calling strike when he gets a buzz on his hip saying that was a strike. Why could we not just have the PA announcer say strike? And if you had cameras, because we have high definition cameras everywhere, if you have a good enough camera for the bases, why not just have one person up there watching this? And if the person's out, then a red light pops up on the scoreboard. The whole scoreboard flashes red. And if he's safe, the whole scoreboard flashes green. And you can remove all of it. I mean, I think it would be ridiculous, but you could remove all of it so easily now. I don't know why you want to.
I don't think they should go there, but oddly enough, they didn't call you and I to ask, so we don't know.
No, but it's imperative that we must have perfection in a game where you don't have perfection on the field. Like you're trying to create almost a video game where there are no glitches in the system. And yet, you know, one of the things that I always find interesting is, obviously this is not every case, but there are more. Or a big part of why we remember is because of the call that was involved. And I bet you that you probably, now you may surprise me, but there was a Detroit Tigers pitcher a few years ago who threw a perfect game, but the last out of the game, the umpire blew the call. Bet you couldn't name that pitcher.
Well, I can't.
But you remember the call or the non-call.
Yeah, I did. And I remember the umpire apologizing for it.
Yep. But we wouldn't remember that play probably at all. I mean, Detroit Tigers fans might, but the rest of us, we wouldn't remember that at all. I can't tell you who the last five pitchers are in baseball who've thrown a perfect game. I don't even know what teams the last five pitchers pitched for who pitched a perfect game. But I remember that call and the debate and everything else that went with it, which is positive.
Yeah, and again, it's part of the game. It's part of the game.
Yeah, Don, it's coming, though. I really believe it. I mean, I've long thought that hockey will be one of those sports that will eventually take one of the two referees off the ice and put him up in the stands so that he can see what's going on trailing the play and his view is not obscured and he can make penalty calls or whatever else from up there. I fully expect that the day is coming when that happens.
Hockey's one of the few games that's actually added a referee and not that long ago. So, yeah, I don't know. And they do review games upstairs, right? I mean, they do in hockey and, well, almost all sports stuff. But so I'll go upstairs to double check.
Yep. No, I could see that happening very easily, that you just say, we are not going to have that guy on the ice because we'll have one guy on ice level who can make calls and he'll be connected with a earpiece and a microphone to the other guy who will be sitting up there and he can see what's happening behind the play when the one referee is obscured or misses something because it's behind him or whatever. Very easily. And you don't even have to, you know, and you may not even have to have that. You don't even have to pay necessarily another official. You probably would. But I mean, if this thing is about saving money somehow, you know, he becomes a video guy. But
You pretty well got to have an official to determine whether or not it's. I mean, you can't have a fan doing it. You have to have a pretty well educated guy doing it.
No, but now you don't have to be able to skate now. You don't have to. I mean, you're not restricted by the fact that you can't skate. It could be anybody as long as they know the rules.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope it doesn't get to that. I mean, there's still enough good quality people that can do the job, whether it's umpires or, I don't know, maybe they're having a lot of trouble with umpires. I mean, there has been an awful season for hockey referees at the minor level. I know at the OHA we were down 25% at the start of the year. We've built it back up again, but, you know, there's a lot of officials that just don't want to do it anymore at the minor level because of the abuse. Now that's not going to take it into the AAA or AA, but officiating, you know, it's a tough game, and some of the young officials that take abuse from grown parents and are told they're awful and berated and everything else. You were involved in minor hockey. I mean they should just have Hulk Hogan hanging around the rinks just to slap people around them. Officials like that.
Well, you know what?
That might help.
I won't say anything because I can't say to you that I never said anything to an official. I tried to not, but I did not always succeed. You know, so... All right. Before I incriminate myself anymore, let's take a very quick break.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
The Olympic men's hockey team roster apparently is being released tomorrow, although there are reports that it has leaked out right now. And, you know, you and I talked about this last week and said, who do you want to see or what do you want to see? And I got to tell you, there are pieces on this lineup, if this turns out to be accurate, that I would be intrigued by. And there's other parts where I go, So you've got people like Josh Hosang, who is playing with the Leafs farm team. Interesting guy. I mean, up and down story, obviously talented player, having a great year with Toronto. Okay. Eric Staal is on the lineup as listed here. Owen Power, the junior, well, the Buffalo Sabres first draft pick who's playing with University of Michigan. Mason McTavish, the Hamilton Bulldog, is listed here, if in fact this is right. David Desharnais, who used to play for the Hamilton Bulldogs when it was an AHL team. And then, you know, Ben Street, Jordan Wheel, Daniel Winnick, Jack McBain, Mark Barbero, Jason Demers, I mean, Brandon Gormley, guys that you may have heard those names before, but only if you're serious about hockey. Now that we have some idea, assuming this is right, does this move you?
Not a lot. Those guys are all famous in their hometowns.
yeah.
But what an array. Like, so that'll be a big hit in Thunder Bay. But yeah, before you're critical, and I read Brian Burke's book or Burke's Law last week, and he went to Jerry Colangelo when he was putting the U.S. Olympic team together, and asked him what he did when he put the dream team together. So you have to understand the philosophy behind it. It's not always about getting the best players. So maybe they talked to Brian Burke because it sounds like they've achieved that goal. But it's all about mix. And it's hard to figure out the mix. Like I said to you, there are a ton of outstanding quality hockey players playing in elite leagues in Europe. And if they're taking a guy off the Toronto Marlies, it makes more sense to take the McTavish kid to me. I mean, he looked like a man among boys at the World Junior Tournament. But even so, I don't know. I don't know if they were restricted to who they could take, or they had a plan. Obviously, they had a plan. It would just be interesting to, before you're critical, to determine how they arrived at that. And a friend of mine's cousin is on the management team. So let me do some research for next week.
No, and see, here's the thing. I'm not critical of the team because I don't know. I mean, a lot of these guys, like the three goalies, as you were talking, I was just having to search because I've never heard of, I don't think, any of the three goalies, Devon Levi, Edward Pasquale, and Matt Tompkins. Maybe I've heard of them. But I had to do it. So I'm not being critical of the team. This could be a winning team. But the one thing I do wonder about, and I think we talked about this last week, is are people going to want to tune in for this? And I don't even know if that matters. I mean, maybe the whole point here is it doesn't matter if people tune in. We just want to win a gold medal. And you know what? That might be more than sufficient. But I don't know, Don. If they don't win a gold and nobody watches, well, you've really... that's fallen short. If you win a gold and it's marginally interesting, I guess you've still succeeded. I don't know. I'm just looking at these names and it's a lot of guys that I may have heard of, but they're long gone or not there yet. I don't know. We'll see. It's an interesting one though.
Well, I'll tell you though, Scott, for the most part, the World Junior tournaments, a lot of kids go in there as unknowns for the rest of Canada. And within 10 days, they're Canadian heroes. So it can be built, and it may resurrect some careers, and it may give some guys some opportunities they never would have had before. Look at the Miracle on Ice 1980. How many of those guys that went on, and nobody had a clue who any of them were until they won a gold medal and in Lake Placid. So, you know, I mean, that can happen here. Maybe it'll kick guys some careers. I don't think it matters that we don't know them now. If they don't do well, I'm more interested in winning the gold medal.
We just better know them at the end. Yeah, we just better know them at the end is what you're saying.
That's right. That's right.
Don Robertson, always love having you on. Thanks for doing this Monday evening.
All right, Scott, stay warm. Thank you.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.